I catch fire, the god will not be seen. Unless the ear catch fire, the god will not be heard. Unless the tongue catch fire, the god will not be named. Unless the heart catch fire, the god will not be loved. Unless the mind catch fire, the god will not be known.
Hello and welcome, everybody. Glad to finally be doing this. Thanks for being here today. We're going to talk about David Rankine's fabulous, wonderful, newish books and do a little deep dive into the most new of them, the Clavis Spiritum. So that should be very exciting. I finally got the hard copy in the mail a couple weeks ago for thanks to Haydian Press. It wasn't free, of course, but happy to support these guys, this fellow's work and that press. I hope you're all supporting the people you like as well. Thanks for all of you who are channel members here supporting me today. That it's actually made quite a nice difference in my life. Every little bit counts. And so thank you. So let's just dive into it. And then afterwards, I've got some notes. Afterwards, we can have a little fun as long as I'm awake. I've been getting up at 5 a.m. every day, sometimes earlier, doing the before sunrise thing, and I do well with that, but boy, come 5 p.m., start to get tired. So here it is, beautiful. It's much thicker than the first one. Clavis Intelligentiatum is a slightly thinner book, but contains breakthrough information in it that is even hinted at by the sigils covered over by keys on the front of the book. And the sigils are slightly obscured. So what David Rankine did there quite famously now is correct sigils that were misdone by Agrippa, because Agrippa apparently, if I'm remembering, used English letters, or whoever Agrippa copied from, which is possible because Agrippa was more of a compiler than an original producer, in a sense. See Dr. Sledge's epic free YouTube course on Agrippa for more on that. But Clavis Intelligentiarum, I read last winter, really enjoyed it. And now the larger Clavis Spiritum is out. So let's talk about it. Most grimoires tell you what to do. Very few explain why it works. And even fewer ask whether something vital has quietly perhaps been lost or removed or forgotten over the centuries. What David Rankine has done in this book and in the previous one is uncover some of those things that have been lost. In particular, the thing we will talk about most today. Now, Clavis Spiritum is definitely one of those rare books that doesn't just teach conjuration, it interrogates it. It asks us very uncomfortable questions about lost methods, unconscious biases, spiritual mechanics, and authority, ritual, authority, and power. So this is not a beginner's book, but at the same time, I would highly recommend it to every beginner. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but it does to me. Let me know if that makes sense to you. So it's a technical grimoire, or a grimoire for technical grimoires and conjurers and magicians, written for people who already practice and want to be sharper, perhaps even faster in the success of their work, and also engage with it in a more intelligible fashion. A lot of these insights come from the fabulous new translations that Dr. Skinner has done of the Summa Sacra Magica, and that will feature heavily in these discoveries. So, let's talk about what this book, also what it isn't. Clavis Spiritum is Volume 2. Volume 1 is also beautifully bound. And you can get them both also on Amazon and softcover. And I probably will also grab some softcovers at some point just so I can make notes and highlight. I like to go through books either a first or second time and actually scribble all over them and get out my yellow highlighter. But with hardcover books, I don't do that. Generally not. So yeah, I've linked both below. You can check out the links to the softcover and the hardcover, which is still available. So book two, who knows what book three will be, but Rankine has recently just agreed to present again at InnokiaCon 2026 in Austin, Texas, via remotely over Zoom. And what he'll be presenting to us is quite fascinating as well, though I'm not sure if it counts as a third sequel to this, a third book in the trilogy. But this book assumes you already know some of the basics and have at least some familiarity with Solomonic or other grimoire-based magic. Rankine is quite explicit about this in the book, though I wonder if he goes a bit too far, because I think there's nothing wrong with beginners diving in the deep end and learning things in the most thorough and technical way possible. And then if it's too much, you can scale it back and go to some more beginner sources, maybe practice with some devotional type work before you get into full-on fasting and conjuration. But he describes his magical writing as an act of offering, not doctrine. So he says, for example, I have some notes on page 4. Where's my... He says, writing a practical magical book is an act of manifestation, of offering the contents for the reader to use or discard as they choose. So this is important because the book isn't prescriptive. It's experimental, reflective, and openly developing as it goes along. This is also the framing of something that is alive and evolving and is growing with the community. So he says also on page 4, magic is a process of change, and to that end, we must always seek to refine and enhance what we do. Amen. So if you're looking for a static system or a plug-and-play ritual book, a cookbook, as we call it, that's what my mom always calls it in astrology, when you have the standard books that tell you how to do things and often repeat charts and tables or LRP rituals and such, we often call those cookbooks. So this is far beyond a cookbook. So I lost my... Yeah, it's not a plug and play. It's something that you do need to bring some experience to or grow with it. And he has a course on Haydian Press. It's actually appropriate to shout out his full course that's starting in a month or two on this ritual practice of conjuration, and it looks quite exciting and in depth. So if you're looking to understand conjuration as a living technology, this book, Clavis Spiritum, is extremely, well, I'd say it's extremely valuable, but I think it's going to be seen as somewhat essential. I haven't had a chance to do this conjuration work yet, but plans are being made. It does take quite a bit of preparation to do something like this, especially since if you live in an apartment building and are good at getting spirits to show up, sometimes you want to be thoughtful and respectful of your environment and your neighbors and take time to go out of town and really get a cabin in the woods, as it were. So, living technology. Now, the single most important idea, I think, in this book is the restoration of the winds in spirit conjuration. What are the winds? We know we refer to the winds, like in the LRP, the Lesser Ritual, the Pentagram, as the directions that we associate with the north, south, east, and west, and the elements placed there are the alignment of the winds. So you have air in the east, water in the west, fire in the south, north is earth. And that's the association or the alignment of the winds. Unlike other rituals, like the ritual of the hexagram in the Golden Dawn, where we follow the zodiacal arrangement. So in the east, we have fire for Aries. And in the west, we have air for Libra and water in the north then. I think I got that. I am tired. Normally I know these things a bit more sharply, but yes, it's late in the day for me, but I still wanted to get this done because I have so many books to review and talk about and so many podcast guests coming up. I hope you all are excited about that. The Winds. Rankine demonstrates in this book, in Clavis Spiritum, that the early grimoires treated winds as transport mechanisms for spirits. So spirits didn't simply just appear, they were brought. And he quotes a great passage here in the Summa Sacra Magica, from the Summa Sacra Magica. The winds have their effect and drive with force as lords of the devils. They compel, chase, push, torment the devils until they come and appear according to the will of the exorcist. That's just on page 6 of this book. The first part of this book alone has quite an impact, let me tell you. So this reframes conjuration entirely. The spirits are not summoned abstractly, but they are moved, as he says it. Then removing the winds is, if we get rid of them, it's like removing the roads and wondering why it takes so long to travel. And he talked about this in the podcast we did this last summer, so you can check that out on my YouTube or podcast as well. And check that out there. Also, his presentation at InnokiaCon last year, you can still watch if you register. The enrollment fees go to support the presenters directly. Then I've linked that down below. So what the question Rankine is asking when he puts these winds back into the practice of Solomonic spirit conjuration is, if the winds dropped out of the grimoire, is this why spirits usually takes such a long time to arrive? And if you've done much serious conjuration, you know that often you'll be repeating a conjuration over and over until the spirit shows up. Now, the better you get at it, the more you might realize and experience them showing up before you're done. And that happens a lot as well, especially if they're familiar to you and you've worked with them a lot, or it's a system of magic you've been working on for many years. But he doesn't stop at theory. He actually has tested these practices out. Of course he has. And after reintegrating the wind conjuration, what he reports is, on page 11, I should have put bookmarks in here. Still cut my teeth on the live streaming thing. He says, I conjured the Jupiterian planetary intelligent Yophiel, spelled Jophiel, but pronounced Yophiel, who arrived immediately at the end of his conjuration. So multiple practitioners confirmed similar results across angelic, Olympic, and infernal spirits. This is not a guarantee, but it, in his experience and the others who have worked with this text, is an increase in response time. It seems like it clears the way for them and helps them show up. And again, he went into a lot of detail in the podcast and in his presentation for at InnokiaCon on that matter. So this is the heart of the book, is that point. And I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of it, because that's why you have to buy the book. But there's more. Should we take a quick break to answer any questions? Oh, thank you very much, Occultology. I read he said that you should use the direction of the winds for ritual work in temple, but the zodiacal directions for astral work. Thoughts? Oh, that's a very interesting question. Yeah, that's for astral work. Yeah, that makes sense, because the winds are terrestrial and based on a Malkuthic arrangement of reality, and then the zodiac are celestial and therefore would influence astral work. That makes perfect sense. Have I put that to test? Not at all. Let's see back up here if there's anything. I love you guys. This is fun. Actually, we're not playing D&D. We're playing Mage the Ascension. And yes, I'm up at 5 a.m. this whole week, and we'll see how long that lasts. It's hard to do the early pre-sunrise work and still function in the evening at all. We'll see. But yeah, I'm excited for gaming tomorrow. It's very cool to have that back in my life. One of the surprise upsides of lockdowns was reconnecting with old hobbies and friends that were practical when you're stuck at home or limited in your social circle. I'm Pope Paul, just finished the first book of Agrippa today. That's awesome. Yeah. good. I love Agrippa. And I love him even more after Dr. Sledge's course on it. Like, I didn't think I could... I guess I never held Agrippa in the highest regard. I just thought he was a remarkable compiler of the occult knowledge of his age. But after hearing what Sledge taught about Agrippa, Agrippa publicly said that he felt that in Italy, he publicly said in lectures that Hermetic Christianity is the highest form of Christianity. So you can imagine how I feel about that. Yeah, I was a happy camper, and that's not going anywhere anytime soon. Rose of Flame. That's what I say about cosmic doctrines. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. And one last one, Spam King. Spam King with a good question. Ironically. So Intelligentiarum was for planetary intelligentsia. Is Spiritum about Guedia? What other spirits are in the grimoires? Yeah, no. So Intelligentiarum is about spirits. Clavis Spiritum is also about spirits. The Guedic spirits are still spirits, whether you're working with Olympic planetary spirits or planetary intelligences or Guedic spirits. Very similar rules apply. Now, it is maybe a good question whether the winds would apply to infernal spirits, but as I already answered, he does address that question, and the answer is yes. The winds still influence infernal spirits. And then last one, I am Pope Paul. When do Enochian Heptarchy work? Lots of times they show up right away. Yeah, so one of the reasons I have a course, go to enochiangrimoire.com for my course on the Heptarchy of the Enochian system. One of the reasons I teach that and love teaching it and love practicing it is because those spirits have always, by everyone who's worked with them, been considered to be very favorable to the magician and understand what magicians are trying to do. And I think that's because they are all part of the general body of Auriel, or at least the R4 archangels, because that explicitly is the case. Hello, Melbourne, Australia. Yeah, it's been fun playing Mage. I haven't done that in probably 20 years. And Jason is a technocrat, and I am a Order Magician, Order of Hermes. And then we're fighting over this a newly awakened Mage character played by the other guy. And then Jason Nelson is DMing. I don't mind mentioning who these guys are, of course, because you can watch them play live on Jason Louv's YouTube, and there's been no recorded sessions since I joined the gang, but it's been quite a fun, it's been a blessing and an honor. Hello, Jacobus, good to see you. Your name is fine. Spam King 1776 is just, it's hilarious. It's hilarious on many levels. All right, let's get back into it. Let me just wet my whistle. But yeah, Llewellyn sent me a bunch of books to review, surprisingly. I didn't ask them to. I guess your boy's getting big time when Llewellyn sends a bunch of... One of these books is really popular. It's like a bestseller now. But I'll show you more about that maybe at the end if you want me to stick around. I've got one of these authors, I'm interviewing him, Raven Digitalis, a shadow work spellbook from the pagan tradition. And I've had Storm Fairy Wolf and other Wiccans and pagan Llewellyn authors on before. And I love that stuff. I grew up with it. I'm certainly not a snob when it comes to my magic. If it works and if you like something, you like it. Don't be ashamed of that. Let's talk about the goddess and divine balance. The goddess and divine balance is the other secret he reveals in this grimoire. Now, the question he asks is simple and so painfully obvious. Where has the goddess been in the grimoires? And that's the thread he pulls. So Rankine here in Clavis Spiritum argues that the divine feminine was not absent but obscured. Goddesses appear fragmented as angels, winds, divine names, and wisdom figures. Central to this discussion is, of course, can anyone guess what word I'm about to say? It's a Hebrew word. You got it. Shekinah. Divine presence and wisdom in Kabbalah. On page 18, David Rankine says, I'm not suggesting a lost or hidden tradition of the Shekinah in the grimoires, rather a moving to the foreground from the shadows. So this matters a lot ritually, bringing back the Shekinah into Solomonic magic, because you don't see it in there. You don't even really see it too explicitly in Golden Dawn Z-Doc conjuration formulas, which is based on grimoiric magic, but again, departs quite a bit. Rankine here is calling for an explicit reinvocation of the Shekinah, which is the presence of God on Earth. Think Kether in Malkut, if you like, Kabbalistically. So the presence of God, that etheric aura, if you like, that light blue light shimmering around things. He explains that activating the Shekinah in conjuration motivates the divine spark within the magician. He says, quote, by calling on the heavenly Shekinah, you activate the earthly Shekinah within. So this reframes authority entirely. And if you've practiced spirit conjuration for real, authority actually still matters. You can't just be like, oh no, my patriarchy, authority's bad. No, it's about functional. You can't plug something into a light socket if you don't have the force of will to actually plug it in. If you throw it at the wall, chances are the light won't turn on, right? You need to have that act of will. That's the kind of what authority means to me in magic. It's more a sort of a version, a subcategory of will. But there's more aspects to authority than that, but we're not going to get into that too much. But the magician is no longer just commanding spirits externally in this way, but standing within a divine polarity. So you see this when we do spirit conjuration in Golden Dawn or modern magic with god forms. And that's something that, again, has not been very publicly known about until people like me started talking a lot about it on this podcast. And there's even authors who have put out books like Pat Zaleski on it withdrew those books from print because I guess they felt it was a bit too secret to let the cat out of the bag on that stuff. So the magician is no longer just commanding spirits externally. You are part of the divine, commanding within the divine. And this might seem like a basic idea to some of you who are really experienced, but it is a massive shift for some people and for some more stodgy traditional views that see you as human commanding the divine to make a spiritual creature attend here and minister to your wishes. Rankine also shows how this balance already exists within the Tetragrammaton itself, right? The Yod, He, Vav, He, unpronounceable name of God, which we try to find various ways to pronounce, either as Yod, He, Vav, He, spelling it out as in letter format, which we do in the GD. Crowley adds vowels in his system, so it's Yehoah or some variation on that. And then, of course, there's the Christian Kabbalists like Johann Reuchlin and Pico della Mirandola's solution to that, which is just to add a shin into it and make it Yeheshua, which is like Yeshua for Jesus. So the tetragram itself, the tetragrammaton is divided between masculine and feminine aspects. And so in this sense, by stepping into the Shekinah, you invoke that balance that we find in the tetragrammaton. Now, one of the most quietly revolutionary parts of this book is the chapter on conjuration with sensory impairment or disability. I've been actually somewhat disabled in the past. I got through it, but there was 3-4 years I couldn't walk without a cane. And those were the years, no shock, that I didn't really do any magic. No surprise. And it was worse than I'm letting on. It was bad. The doctors said I was going to be dead by 35. They were wrong. Praise the Lord. I suffered through it and found a way to figure out what was wrong with me without medical help. It's wild. Wild. So this topic is almost completely absent from historical and modern occult literature, though it is beautifully addressed in this other book, in a Frater Acker book that he wrote with another fellow, Craig Slee. I hope I'm not getting the name wrong, who I believe is in a wheelchair. And they did a remarkable book on that. Goetic Atavisms, it's called. It's still available. And yeah, that's a remarkable text. Shout out to Frater Acker and Craig Slee, I believe, who wrote that book. Really remarkable. But Rankine is also now taking on the task of sensory impairment and disability. So this is a topic that in fact actually is absent from the historical and modern occult literature almost across the board. Rankine says our knowledge, unconscious bias is to consider issues that are not raised in our day-to-day experience. And so rather than offering vague encouragement, he modifies ritual sequences, sensory assumptions, and procedural requirements so that conjuration remains effective regardless of physical ability. And this isn't just symbolic inclusion for the sake of making people feel still included. It's practical and, of course, obviously ethical, long overdue, about time. Thank you very much, David, for taking into account those of us who have or do deal with physical limitations. Let's talk about spirit hierarchies. So Rankine is careful about spirit psychology. He warns strongly against projecting human emotion onto spirits. He says don't anthropomorphize them and see them as intangible humans. They may appear that way, but they're not like that. They're not like us. So he reinforces obligation and respect. And he says, be mindful that you deliver anything you say and any breach. Be mindful that you deliver anything you say you will. Keep your agreements. And any breach of that voids the agreement, essentially breaks the pact or promises made between you and the spirit. So the book gives one of the clearest modern explanations of celestial, infernal, Olympic, and wind hierarchies without pretending the grimoires are in any way perfectly consistent. Rankine embraces contradiction as historical reality rather than trying to simply smooth it over. He just lets these things live as they are, often in dichotomy or in paradox. And of course, you as a practitioner through your experience will find out what works best for you. Hopefully you find this somewhat reassuring, and even if it is not as sensationalistic as it could be, or as some people want it to be. He summarizes this all together really well by saying, there's no one set way and no best way. What there is a way that works for each practitioner. So this is a restoration of missing mechanics, this text. And if you already practice ceremonial or grimoire magic and want faster manifestations, clearer authority and deeper understanding, this is essential reading. It doesn't replace the grimoires. It explains why they stopped working as well as they used to, which is something we've been wondering ever since I got into magic 30 years ago or more. All right. I have some more notes. I have some footnotes we can get into. Let's get into that. So Rankine in this book also starts with a deceptively simple observation that early grimoires assumed spirits were moved, not merely summoned. In Summa Sacra Magica, the winds are not symbolic. They are coercive. They're directional and functional. He quotes, the winds have their effect and drive with forces, lords of the devils. They drive, compel, chase, push, torment the devils until they do come and appear according to the will of the exorcist. And so that language really matters, in fact. It's old, dated from the Summa Sacra Magica, the perhaps greatest of the medieval grimoires, finally almost completely translated by our dear Stephen Skinner. And it's not poetic language, it's logistical language. Spirits are being transported. Now, by the late medieval period, grimoires kept the authority structure but lost the delivery system. And Rankine notices something that others did not connect. He asks, if the winds dropped out of the grimoires before the 16th century, is this why spirits usually take so long to arrive? And that's a brutal question, because imagine removing roads from a city and then blaming travelers for being late. Most modern conjurations rely on authority, threat, repetition, waiting, and early conjurations relied on authority, direction, and transport. So the winds were not optional embellishments. They were the engine by which spirits actually showed up. It's pretty intense. Rankine documents 40 named winds, each tied to direction and scope. He explains there are 40 different names of winds. The relevant wind brings the spirit from wherever in the world it may be. This is crucial. You're not guessing where the spirit is. You're calling all possible routes. This is why he says that Ganellus, the alleged author of the SSM, insists that, quote, the semaphore, these are names, forces with great holiness, but the union of the winds with a particular act. So holiness commands, winds execute. And so before, when we're not using the winds, we're commanding, right? It's like telling someone to, like, come inside while you're holding the door shut. So it's a division of labor as well. I like that idea. That's a fun idea. Like, we've taken the onus or the opportunity away from spirits to manifest as strongly or as quickly as they would otherwise. And Rankine doesn't just reconstruct this theory again. He does test it out. And after reintegrating the wind conjuration, he says, again, I mentioned this earlier. Yeah, this is my note. Yofiel arrived immediately at the end of the conjuration. He also mentions Bethor, which is the Olympic planetary spirit of Jupiter, who I've worked quite a bit with as well, arrived before the end of the conjuration, but waited for its completion. I thought that was a hilarious thing for him to observe and note, that the spirit was there, but didn't interrupt. Very polite, very Jupiterian of that spirit. And the Olympic spirits are considered very benevolent in general. They are coming out of a Calvinist Christian grimoire from 1575, after all, and preparatory work to invoke Olympic spirits involves living a good Christian life. Arguably, of course, that grimoire was an attempt to smuggle in Greek gods into Christian magic. But that's a whole other conversation, which I've made many videos on my YouTube, so check it out. But this detail matters. The spirit doesn't crash the ritual. It arrives early and waits. So this implies that the transport worked, the spirit respected ritual protocol, and that the authority was intact. Rankine is very careful not to promise any guarantees when it comes to this. But he says that he cannot guarantee spirits will always turn up as soon as the conjuration is finished, because speed is not cosmetic. Speed indicates compliance, is, I think, the idea that he's getting at there. So it shows that the hierarchy is working. And, yeah. One of the most fascinating confirmations is that other traditions never lost this. And he notes that in Kimbanda, the spirits ride in on the Baravento, the turning wind, and in Palo Mayombe, the spirits are called to bring, the winds are called to bring the spirits. The grimoire tradition didn't invent this, it forgot it. Living traditions didn't. And that should make us a bit more aware of how much work there is yet to do in our own Western traditions of magic and spirituality. Now, so if there's one idea that you should take away from this about the fundamental changes of how conjuration works in the Clavis Spiritum, which I hope you all get, the spirits do not simply respond to authority, they respond to infrastructure. And this is something I've never said quite so clearly as Rankine has in this book, but it's what I've been trying to talk about for a very long time, especially when it comes to things like ideas of authority and hierarchy. I've never seen that stuff as belligerent in the way that a lot of people try and interpret it today, but as structural. I'm going to say more about that another time, but low energy tonight. So the winds are not symbolism. They are the missing machinery. And once you see that, you really can't unsee it. And I will do another review on the first book, Clavis Intelligentiarum, another time, along with all these other books that I have to talk about. Like, I'll have the author of this book on soon. This is what I'm very excited to talk about. Yes, this book is Light in Extension, The Lost History and Documents of the Golden Dawn Temple, Horus Number 5, in Bradford, England. And it's got these amazing color plates of images that have been lost from the to time and rediscovered, and it tells us a lot about what the early Golden Dawn temples were actually like and how they ran. And I'm deep reading that right now, and I've already Zoomed with the author, Melissa Seams, and we're going to talk about it. I'm going to do a review on it, and it's going to be great. So lots more to come. Let's get to some questions, super chats, whatever you guys have in store for me. I know there's always good fun to be had with my wonderful community.
And now, a word from our sponsors. While we cannot control whether any ads get put in the spots allocated, we thank you for listening to those that do, since they help keep this project alive. You can also get ad-free content and bonus content and videos and a private webpage by subscribing exclusively to magicwithoutfears.com for only a couple dollars a week, or $6 a month, or $50 for the year. It helps a lot, plus you get emails about other exclusive things. Thank you very much.
All right. Shekinah. Yeah, I know. The hardcover, £20 for shipping, it's crazy. Especially since a British pound now is worth $2 Canadian. When I was a kid, a British pound was worth $2.50 Canadian. So it got better, and then it got worse again. Is this what we invoke in the Cobblestone Cross? Yeah, Occultology, just use my Amazon link down below. Use my Amazon link, because you're in America, and then I get 50 cents from your purchase, and that's 50 cents out of Jeff Bezos' pocket into mine. So help me rob Jeff Bezos and go all pirate on his Amazon ass by using my affiliate links. Is this what we invoke in the Kabbalistic Cross? No, the Kabbalistic Cross has a completely different function of bringing in the divine light and equilibrating it in ourselves through the vertical and horizontal fusion as the Microprosopus. It does some other things as well, but it's not to do with activating mechanisms to conjure spirits to visible appearance. Authority is what is patron. Okay. I've been invoking the Shekinah, my dailies, for most of this year. Highly recommended. Yes, I am Pope Paul. That's, yeah. And in the Golden Dawn, actually, the Shekinah is included in Meditation 1 of the Stella Matutina. The final stage of Meditation 1 involves contemplation of the presence of God in nature, and that is that's an invocation and contemplation of the Shekinah. Yes, it sounds like this book talks about everything you figured out in practice. It does. I don't know if you know the exact way to work with the winds in this grimoiric sense that's been rediscovered through the Summa Sacra Magica and other grimoires that Rankine uses, but yeah, I can't recommend Clavis Spiritum enough. Absolutely. Yeah. Rose of Flame, Goetic Atavisms, is a great book. And his Holy Diamond, I know. I like it. This is how much I liked his Holy Diamond. I liked it this much. Boom. Boom. Beautiful books. Obviously, Scarlet Imprint and Anathema Publishing are the best. And then Holy Diamond. Beautiful. The hand dipped. Ooh, that's so nice. Like, you can actually feel the ink or the paint from the actual hand dip and the black leather of the leather Holy Diamond. There's one of these for sale on Miskatonic right now. Such a gorgeous book. And it's been such a pleasure to actually read such a fancy version of it. Yeah. Oh, and this one also was actually... I bought this secondhand, of course, but it was signed by Frater Acher to the previous owner, to my good friend, I won't say the name. The first book in the cycle, the greatest work, might as something begin. Anyway, yeah, these books in general weren't signed, but I got lucked out. I only have two of these books in boxes with a slipcase that are ultra fancy, but I figured... I wanted one from Miskatonic, one from Scarlet Imprint, and one from Anathema Publishing, because they do the highest quality work that we have in occult publishing these days, and I saved up for a long time to get those, so that was really nice. Yeah, Rankine very much knows his craft. Absolutely. Learning the hard way. Yeah, the spirits travel by the wind. You don't move them through the wind, but they travel by the wind. You call them by... You move the spirit through your authority and preparations and invocations and all of that. But the wind is the road the spirit travels. Move, therefore, move and appear. Many of you will know that line. And Danny Ocean, it's a new name for me. Welcome, Danny Ocean. He says, I've had great success with spirits by just being an ardent seeker and student. I think there's a layer of respect that makes a huge difference. Absolutely. Very well said. That is a huge point. So that's what I had prepared for today. Thank you for being with me here tonight on this Friday evening live stream. I thought it would be a fun night to do it, and I had the time. I was going to get some recording done of other things and instruments, but I just didn't have the energy after while I was running around all day going to doctor's appointments or trying to go. It's like I went to two places and waited, and then they're like, oh, the doctor will just call you at home. Then the doctor called me and was like, you need to be seen in person. I'm like, I know. Anyway, I already posted on Facebook about my displeasure with the Canadian medical system. It does work a little bit. It's just a gong show. But yeah, anyway, that's why I'm extra tired right now. Otherwise, I would have had more energy, but I didn't want to change my plans because I just don't... running out of time to do these things as the year gets into motion. If you have any questions, want to throw me some super chats and donations, that's appreciated. Happy to go a bit longer if you guys want. Just let me know. I'm going to have a few sips of this and a few drags of this. Maybe I have a cool video I can play you. I've got some great new videos coming too for you to enjoy. Oh yeah, I can't play the InnokiaCon videos anymore because someone copyrighted all the music. And so now I'm just recording all original music for all that stuff. I still do Golden Dawn training. I'm actually starting up a new neophyte class soon with some new neophytes. If anyone's interested in that, let me know. There's some information on my website. You can go to goldendawnselfinitiation.com if you're interested in that. Also, I'm going to be opening up a new training path focused on hermetic magic and spirituality that's not explicitly Golden Dawn in its approach. And so that'll be more general and appeal to some people as well. More news on that as we head towards the equinox. But here, let me give you this to enjoy while I take a quick break.
Let me enter the pathway of darkness, and peradventure, there shall I find the light. In the name of the Lord of the Universe, who works in silence and whom naught but silence can express, today we will talk about the simple tools of self-initiation in the Golden Dawn tradition, and how much more simple they can in fact be than many people imagine. While the overall methodology of our approach and the traditional approach to GD self-initiation is too complicated and long to include in an email, it's important we talk about the tools and what you need to get and rely on and contemplate continuously. First of all of these tools must be cared for in your sacristy, even if that is just a shelf or a drawer. Incense, anoint, bless them often upon withdrawal and putting away. Wrap them in silk or white linen as appropriate. Red slippers or socks. The socks or slippers can be any material, but should be comfortable. My personal preference is to use Eurythmy slippers, but adding socks inside them for the cold winters. A black robe or gown. A black robe is essential, however, clothing is fine in the beginning for the first few months. In the neophyte grade, clothing is sufficient, but a simple black robe, hooded or unhooded, should be acquired by 1 equals 10 Zelator grade this December.
Any material is fine, but they should be unadorned and without any decorations. The nemis, the striped black and white Egyptian headdress you see so many people wearing in the pictures. I recommend not getting one right away and waiting till you can make or buy a deluxe one. The deluxe ribbon ones last for ages compared to the standard striped fabric ones. I went through a few standard fabric ones before having our seamstress make me a deluxe ribbon one in 2001, and I still use it to this very day. These tools will be the focus of continual contemplation over the next 3 years. They are both symbolic and talismanic, but none of the above three are as important as the central symbol and tool of the Golden Dawn Temple, the cross and triangle. These symbols and their configurations are nothing less than keys to adepthood and the solar initiation, the mysteries of 5=6. I like to think that the cross and triangle are to the GD system what the Monus Hieroglyphica was to John Dee. Perhaps you might even find connections. The red cross, a Calvary cross, should fit inside the white triangle regardless of the direction the triangle is facing. This will be important. Do not make the cross too large for the inside of the triangle. You must construct these from paper or wood for the start of this course and your self-initiation ceremony. This must be done. It doesn't need to be perfect. You can make it perfect later, but you must do this. Lastly, the ritual diary. Your magical ritual diary or personal grimoire, book of shadows, etc. And we will use these names relatively synonymously for this 3-year journey to simply refer to the special book you use to record your work and studies. It should not have been used before and should be bought for this purpose and no other. You will treat this as your most sacred text on this path because it is. The holy words you write in it are divine as they chart and record your experience of the great mystery through the 6 self-initiations and the 4 elemental grades. Wrap it in white, linen, or silk, and never let another person touch it or ideally even see it until you have passed your final examination 3 years from now. Of course, an exception to this is sharing pages of it with your teacher and classmates whenever you feel it will be helpful, but this is up to you. No book you own will be more important than this one that records your alchemical journey. You may fill it up, of course, and need multiples by the end, and many initiates enjoy using a separate diary for each grade. This is a wonderful thing to do, as long as you fill up those diaries and are not letting precious pages go to waste. For your magical motto, or magical name, you must choose a motto to represent this 3-year journey of alchemical transformation. This will be something to discuss before the equinox, and is usually not changed midway, but certainly can be. Again, these are incredibly personal things and have to be discussed and reflected on in one-on-one sessions of spiritual direction. These weekly private lessons will be essential to completing successfully this self-initiation course within 3 years.
All right. Gave me a little chance to catch my breath. And there's been some other great comments. And someone from Reddit. Reddit has reached out to me. Reddit. Oh, that hive of villainy and scoundrels. I'm so excited to be doing a Reddit AMA. Thank you to Michael Jackson. It's not Michael Jackson, but for the invite to do an AMA on r/occult. It's my pleasure. I even hopped on and checked out what's going on Reddit. I'm there. You can find me under Hermetic Podcast. I saw a bunch of people saying nonsense about the Golden Dawn, of course, and I had to correct them. Like, it ended in 1903, and there's never been any connected groups ever since then. It's like, the Golden Dawn is one of the remarkable organizations that has an unbroken lineage. The thing is, we don't have lineage in the Golden Dawn. That's not how it works. And if you want to see a deep dive into that, me and Nick Farrell talked about it on his recent appearance last summer on the podcast. So, yeah. But, yeah, there's so many temples. And the better known I become, the more of these secret temples that have been connected and reached out from, connected to the beginning of the beginning days, have reached out and let me know they're out there and said hi and maybe comment on some of my work or told me about some of the things that I'm doing that connect with one of their temples somewhere that shocked me that it existed. There's just so much more. It's just the Golden Dawn, unlike OTO and AMWORK and a lot of other organizations. So, similar to Martinism, the Golden Dawn orders and temples never really have had much need to make themselves known because it takes so much work to initiate new people physically or to train them as self-initiates. We're doing initiations here in Vancouver, and like instantly the queue is years. It's years long of people wanting to do it. So I'll never be advertising that. It's just, it's a lot of work, and it's a work of love and passion and labor. And yeah, but fortunately there's lots of groups out there. So if there's one near you, check it out. If there isn't, it's pretty normal to have to travel to participate in things like this. Yeah. So Reddit, I'm coming for you, Reddit. Let's go. Let's go. And Occultology, yes. Use my affiliate links to help me steal money from Jeff Bezos through affiliate links. I've been posting affiliate links for years and never gotten a cent from any of them. But hey, miracles can happen. Yeah, the AMA Thursday. This will be good. AMA on Reddit with me Thursday. That'll be fun. Rose of Flame says, I've made it a habit to call the four winds whenever I cast a circle since reading about them in the Ophiel's books years back. But that was intuitive, so this is wonderful info. Yes, and the four winds are not the winds David Rankine's talking about that make spirit conjuration easier. A similar idea, perhaps similar things, but different. Same, same, but different. And yes, you can get both soft covers for the price of one hardcover. That's pretty normal. Yeah. Using the winds to bring spirits is like sending an Uber to pick them up. Yeah, sure. Why not? Peace be upon you. Thank you. Peace be upon you and all of you hanging out with me on a Friday night instead of going clubbing and pounding Red Bulls and vodkas and doing Molly. This is a way healthier way to spend our time. I am Pope Paul says, I don't know if this has been done before, but I figured out a way of correlating the letters of the Enochian alphabet to musical notes. Listening to the holy table perimeter does something. Yes, using magic and music together has always been a very powerful tool. Highly recommended. And there's been multiple correlations of Enochian letters to musical notes. I'd love to see what you've come up with. That would be very interesting. Cultology, I can use the techniques of pathworking trumps on the mind. Can I use the techniques of pathwork for pathworking the trumps on the minor arcana? You can. Yeah. Go for it. I would stick with the, a lot of people, it takes a lot of work to work with the trumps over time, but sure, you can pathwork anything. I just put that comment on the screen before I even read it. But I love it. Redwood Raven Clan says, I am making tacos. I'm jealous. I do have two avocados that are ready, though, so I might make tacos after this myself if I don't pass out right away. I probably won't pass out. I have to stay awake till 8, otherwise my sleep schedule, I wake up at 3 a.m. instead of 5. It's a whole thing. Good, I got through all the comments. It's great to have comments. Thank you, guys. I am trying to do more live streaming and get better at it. And maybe one day I'll just try and prompt you talking and or ranting, as they call it on the internet, when someone just speaks from the heart and mind. I love that that's just called ranting these days. That's pretty funny. Also, if you checked out the Arcane Synaxis that I did with Ike Baker, Frater Eleftheria of Lifting the Lamp, and Sky of Philosophical Minds, I'm pleased to announce something. Hopefully I'm not jumping the gun too much, but we are going to now be doing those monthly. I proposed quarterly. They wanted to do it monthly. I said, I'm in. So you're going to get a whole lot more of our fun little four-way in as Arcana Synaxis every month. And that's going to be pretty intense. So it's going to encourage us all, I think, just to bring more of our studies, research, and constant continual learning to all of you. So that's going to be very fun. And I hope you support our work in doing that through memberships, super chats, but also sharing the videos, but even just liking them. YouTube changed their algorithm and sent out some videos to all of us explaining how they changed their algorithm. YouTube actually communicates a lot more to creators than people suspect. And they do tell you what to do and how things work for the most part. Doesn't mean they won't shadow ban you and pretend they haven't. I was on the phone with a Google person for the first time ever. They actually talked to me because they wanted to talk to me about something. And I tried to mention the whole shadow banning suppression thing, and they were like, oh, we don't know anything about that. So, yeah, of course you don't. Jorge Quinones loves tacos. I'm certain that you do. How many kids do you have? Sorry, that's dirty. But what was I saying? Yeah, so YouTube made a change where, like, subscribers doesn't really matter so much anymore. It does matter, but not as much. Liking a video, if you just, you can just change someone's life. You could change my life by liking all my videos. That sounds crazy, but the world is crazy now. The economies that we all participate in are crazy. Personal, relational economies, academic, intellectual economies, political economies, and economies. They're all crazy. They're all up in air. It's a great time for magic. And the littlest thing, just liking all of someone's videos, let alone commenting on them, can actually change someone's life. I could actually afford dental work if you got, if enough of you liked my videos. So that's a way you can support us as well. So we are going to be doing Arcana Synaxis every month. It's going to be amazing. Myself, Ike Baker, Eleftheria as our Mad Aussie Thelemite member, and Sky of Philosophical Minds. All three of those guys are going to also be at EnokiaCon 2026 in person in Texas, it looks like. So, stay tuned. Rose of Flame, is the audio out? I don't know. It doesn't seem out to me. I can always turn it up, but I think it's got the volume at 9 and the gain at 7 on the Yamaha board. Can anyone else not hear me? Let me know. Am I audible? Hello, McFly, Bueller. EnokiaCon 2026 is November 6th through 8th in Austin, Texas. Go to arcaneresearchsociety.com/2026 and you can register. We still have early enrollment specials on. I think I can put the link right here. You can register right now at a very great discount. Yeah, I think that link should work. Yeah. And we still have, you can even propose to present. We still need presenters. We got a lot, but there's room for more because we have a whole building in downtown Austin, Texas that we've got. The fact that people are responding to me makes me think that the audio is working fine anyway. But yeah, Austin, Texas next year is going to be great. And before November 2026 at EnokiaCon, we have a workshop for the Arcane Research Society. So signing up for EnokiaCon also gets you everything else we do that year. All the courses, all the events. We might even do a retreat in the summer. But in May, most likely, we will have a workshop in Austin. The same venue, big building, downtown Austin. And we will be featuring that workshop. We'll be featuring Jason Louvre as the presenter, as the workshop teacher. And it won't be Enochian. It'll be whatever he wants to do, chaos magic, you name it. And there's some other people I might invite to do a presentation or a workshop. Actually, I want to get I shouldn't say so before I mention it to him, but I want to get a Craig Williams to do a thing at that event. So anyway, if he hears through the grapevine in advance, that's fine. But yeah, there'll be a workshop as well. So when you pay your annual dues for Arcane Research Society, you get access to everything we do. And that's really exciting. It allows us to do a lot of stuff and it allows us to function internationally. So check out all these things that I've mentioned today. Whatever floats your boat, If you've got any questions or want to throw another super chat or buy some memberships for the YouTube page, that all really helps out. Or just the videos. Go through all my videos and like them all. That could have, it has a disproportionate effect that you wouldn't even believe these days. So that's what you can do. Yeah, Jason is great. Jason Louv is wonderful. Absolutely. I plan on rereading his Empire of Angels before we go down there so that we can get more into the nuances of Dee and Kelly and his great work. So check out Jason Louv's Empire of Angels book. Really great. Very, it's a page turner. It's hard to write a history page turner, but he did. All right, I think it's been over an hour, so I think that's good, unless anyone has anything urgent they want to have me discuss or comment on. Let me know. I'll give you till I finish my lime and water with a strawberry in it for flavoring. It's also got triple second tequila. I'm not a loser. Just kidding. Just being silly. Yeah. This has been good. Activity helps. Oh God, you know what I wanted to? Next live stream. This is what I got for Christmas. I've always wanted this. It's the Druidcraft Tarot Deck. I'll do some drawings from cards of that. The Druidcraft Tarot Deck, I'll do that on my next live stream. So if anyone wants a Druidcraft Tarot reading, we can do that. Plus, I have a Zoom hangout coming up with my channel members and patrons this Sunday. So just become a channel member, become a patron, go to hermeticmysteryschool.com, join my Patreon patron or the YouTube channel patronage, and show up this Sunday and hang out with me on Zoom. Last time we hung out on Zoom for 4 hours. We won't be doing that again anytime soon, but definitely we'll have a good hour, a bit longer than that, to just talk about anything, not publicly on YouTube, off the record. And yeah, it's been a good thing. It's been a fun thing. And I thank everyone for having fun with me and being a part of that. Yeah. Maybe it's time to make tacos. Yeah. Use those avocados. It's a shame to let them go to waste. They cost $1 million each in Canada these days. And we should enjoy our fruit, vegetables, and meat. Because soon we'll be eating the bugs. I hope not. Resist. Resist. Taco Time. Taco Time when I was a kid was my favorite fast food restaurant. We only had two in Canada, I think, or maybe just two in British Columbia, but one was somewhat near Vancouver up in a place called Squamish that you've never heard of. And whenever we were going up to Whistler to ski and going through Squamish, I would always cry and scream if we didn't go to Taco Bell. Taco Time. Yeah, Taco Bell we didn't have and I wasn't familiar with till I went to the States. When I do the Druid craft, make sure to point out the 14, the Feralt. All right, I will do. Thanks, that's a good heads up. Get in Z pods. Yeah. Fun stuff. All right, people. Be well. I hope you enjoyed this deep dive into David Rankine's fabulous work. He's agreed to come back on the podcast very soon and tease about what he's going to be doing at EnochiaCon this year. His research has taken him into the Middle Ages, into an interesting text that he's mentioned to me. And oh my God, we're in such a great era of rediscovery and understanding and bridging the horizons of the past and fusing them to the horizons of the present. And it's a delightful fusion of horizons that is causing this occult revolution, this explosion of spirituality and learning. And it gives me a lot of faith and hope in a otherwise dark time in our world. Whatever side of the street you stand on, or whether you're up in the clouds or down in the darknesses of the infernal realms, it's an exciting time and a time to make your mark and maybe influence the world for good. So I wish you much magic. And you got the book from my link. If I don't get a kickback from Amazon's affiliate thing, I'll know it's a scam. But if I get my first 10 cents from that affiliate link, take that, Jeff Bezos. Suck it. So silly. So silly. God, what a world we're living in. The great Amazon. I've actually got something coming from Amazon tonight. I decided to relive my childhood. When I was four or five, I bought my first comic books. Obviously, I couldn't read, but I fell in love with them based on the covers, and those were the original, very bloody, black and white Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics, the original ones that were, like, super graphic, but I loved them. And that was what I collected. That was my main comic book that I collected all the way up for the next 7 years of my life until I became a teenager. And they got goofy real fast. Our artwork got real goofy. And they were less bloody, less adult, less visceral. But the early ones are now out as big collected graphic novels. So I've got volume one arriving tonight, and I'm going to read that when I wake up at 5 a.m. before I have my coffee and in between rituals. So yeah. All right. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. See you all. And hopefully see you all Sunday. Come to my Zoom hang for members and patrons. It'll be great. Or come to InnokiaCon, sign up for the Arcane Research Society. Join me on a Golden Dawn journey or a hermetic spirituality and magic journey. Many roads are departing in this yellow wood, and you can take the path less traveled or a path well traveled. It's entirely up to you. Actually, that makes me think. Let's end. Oh, wait, I had it prepared. Oh. We'll have to do it next time. I had something to read you. Anyway, good night, everybody. It's been great. The Celtic Mysteries is still a thing. They're happening in the background, actually. So I'm in the I was meant to record today. I was meant to record some bagpipes. So I've been working on the stuff in the background because lockdown and COVID derailed everything, and we had to just give it a rest and start it up. But that will be happening. They will be happening in Ireland for the Celtic Mysteries. There will be an online component, but mostly it's going to be an in-person thing taking place in Ireland. And I have two songs coming out. One is being re-released after it's being remixed. They're ballads. They're spell songs for the Tuatha De Danann, for the Irish gods. So I have a spell song for called The Ballad of Lugh coming out, which you haven't heard, and the re-releasing with new tracks on it, with new instruments on it, with my friend Justin Hagberg of 3 Inches of Blood. He's doing keyboards, and I'm doing some new Illan pipes on it. That's The Ballad of Bridget. And we're putting that out. I'm putting it out hopefully in time for St. Patrick's Day this year in March on a double-sided 7-inch vinyl record. So you'll be able to get a vinyl record from me called The Gods of Light and Fire, which has these two songs of Lugh and Bridget. I have my Bridget altar shrine right next to me here, and I have my Lugh one up there. And I actually have some very cool techniques of magic that Lugh has taught me that I've done in classes. So there will be a preamble online experience of the Celtic Mysteries for those who want to gear up for it. But mainly it's gonna kick off after 2027, after the big InnokiaCon in Prague in 2027. After that is when we'll kick off doing the actual Order of Celtic Mysteries initiations. And you can sign up for that. Join the mailing list, orderofcelticmysteries.com. It's my passion. It's my life's work. I look forward to getting down with it and building something beautiful and hopefully lasting. So I hope you're down to learn a little Irish too, because that's part of it. Norse magic and Odin is just not my thing. It's just not my thing. I wish it was, Angelo, but There's so many other people. Like, I'd love to have Sean Yotes on, because I did start with Norse runes before tarot. Every night before I went to bed from 1992 to 1994, I was doing Norse rune castings before I went to bed, and got pretty good at interpreting them. I was really suspicious that it wouldn't work for me. It wouldn't really be a thing. But it worked, and it became a really serious practice for me. So I do have a deep connection and love with the Norse traditions, but it's not my wheelhouse. But I would love to get Sean Yotes on to talk about it, and I'd love to read some of those books. So that could be a podcast on Norse stuff for sure. Good call. Good call. All right, there's a cool closing video. Stick around and enjoy that. There is no luck except where there is discipline. Yeah, there's no Fada accents. Nivin Anra. Ach means but. Mara mean. So the I would have an accent on it. And you pronounce the M, not the B. Mean. An. Smacht. Nivin. Mayhu. Broken Irish is better than perfect English, as they say. Grunil Magar Maharin Jas. Eowai. Agus. Chiagwich. Thank you. It's been a delight. It's fun to do these tired, because it's like being high or stoned or exhausted or something, but it's exhausted. It's just tired from getting up early. But it's fun. I wish I was better at live streaming. I wish I had that magic touch or whatever it is that lets people just do it for hours and become really popular, but too much of an introvert at the end of the day. It takes a lot of energy to put myself out there. Yeah. See you later, cool kids. Cheers.
Diving deep into the practices and reality tunnels of the esoteric and the occult, check out Praxis Behind the Obscure podcast, where I interview practicing occultists, do book reviews, and much more. Check us out on YouTube, Red Circle, and many other podcast platforms.
Hermetic Science Enterprises is a publishing company based in Scotland, UK, that specializes in Western esoteric printed literature as well as educational videos. With various imprints under its belt, its roster consists of grimoire tradition literature, alchemical works, Golden Dawn tradition books, and the several texts and videos originally belonging to the philosophers of nature. Besides its downloadable videos and standard hardcover edition books, Hermetic Science Enterprises also produces beautiful and precious limited fine edition books that are true pieces of art. For more information to order any of its products, please visit www.hermeticscienceenterprises.co.uk. That's hermeticscienceenterprises.co.uk. And as a lot of you know, I've talked with the publisher Lenny on the podcast before, including a six-hour epic extended version on the Patreon, and seen the fine edition of his new Grimoire of Scott's Discovery of Witchcraft, which is only available for purchase up to 50 limited copies till the end of May, I believe. So check it out now. HermeticScienceEnterprises.co.uk.
EnochiaCon 2025 was a blast, and thank you so much to Dr. Justin Sledge for bringing that rare, true and faithful relation copy of Dee's original Enochian work. We are proud to now announce EnochiaCon 2026, November 6th through 8th in Austin, Texas. 2026 membership includes access to our workshop this spring, also in Austin. We will have multiple rooms, a workshop room, a green room, a dining hall, a whole building downtown. But 2025 is not done yet. Our members still have access to this December 6th, 2025, a full-day workshop with Dr. Terry Burns and Frater R.C. on the practice of Enochian magic, online and in person from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thanks for watching to the end. Let's share some more details about 2026. Our EnochiaCon conference and spring workshop will be in Austin, Texas, 6th through 8th of November for the EnochiaCon itself. You can sign up at arcaneresearchsociety.com/2026. But it's not too late also to attend our 2025 course of study, including the December 6th full-day workshop on the practice of Enochian magic with me and Dr. Terry Burns. You can go to EnochiaCon.com to sign up there.